Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2001 with a release date of Friday, March 4th, 2016 to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. Hams in Australia and New Zealand lose a longtime favorite retail giant. A satellite lets an unprecedented QSO happen between Antarctica and Argentina. Hamfests are gearing up in New Jersey and West Virginia. And at long last, there's a reasonable explanation for the space music heard four decades ago aboard Apollo 10. All this and more in Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2001, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's first and only independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, here is Skeeter Nash, N5ASH.
We begin this week's newscast with news that Dick Smith Electronics, a longtime mainstay for amateurs in Australia and New Zealand, is closing. The story of the closure of this electronics giant comes from Amateur Radio Newsline's Graham Kemp, VK4BB.
Hi, this is Dick Smith, VK2DIK.
That voice and call is very well known here in VK. VK2DIK founded many Australian companies, arguably best known DSE. But it's the end of an era for loyal purchasers of gear and components from Dick Smith Electronics. The giant Australian retailer, which bears the name of its amateur radio founder, is closing its doors during the course of the next 2 months, shutting 301 retail locations throughout Australia and 62 in New Zealand. The closure follows an unsuccessful attempt by the company's receivers to complete a sale. Founded in 1968 in a Sydney suburb by Australian entrepreneur Dick Smith AC, VK2DIK, Woolworths Limited purchased the majority stake in the business and ultimately in 1982 became the electronic chain's sole owner. Woolworths sold the company to private equity firm Anchorage Capital Partners in 2012, but it was announced on January 5 of this year that the electronics company, which had amassed large debt, was being placed in receivership under Ferrier Hodgson with the hope that a sale would rejuvenate enterprise. Receiver James Stewart announced in late February, however, that none of the offers received for Dick Smith Holdings were considered acceptable, either as a bid for the group in its entirety or for the stores in either Australia or New Zealand as standalone offers. Dick Smith was quoted in the Australian media as characterising the offers as being either too conditional or too far below the liquidation values. Over the years before he sold, the stores enjoyed a robust reputation as the go-to place for radio components, as well as kits including the Dick Smith HF, UHF and VHF transceiver line. A fire sale began at all locations on February 26, and Hilco, a liquidator based in the United Kingdom, will look over the sale of stock as locations shut. The move leaves a total of nearly 3,000 employees in both countries without jobs. The AC after Smith's name is an honour, an Officer of the Order of Australia, awarded in 1999 for his services to the community, charity and business. In 2015, he was advanced to a Companion of the Order of Australia for eminent service to the community as a benefactor of a range of not-for-profit and conservation organisations through support for major fundraising initiatives for both humanitarian and social welfare programs, to medical research in the visual arts, and to aviation. VK2DIK was patron of the Wireless Institute of Australia for its 100-year celebrations. The Dick Smith Electronics chain is yet another of outlets for VK hams that is closed in recent times. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Graham Kemp, VK4BB.
Also from New Zealand, we receive word that the past president of the New Zealand Association of Radio Transmitters and a longtime core member of the organization, Bruce Douglas, NL2WP, became a silent key on February 13th. Licensed since 1992, he became part of NZART's management team in 1999 to help with the organization's financial business. Bruce made use of his vast knowledge and experience as trust lawyer to assist NZART and helped establish the group's radio science and education trust document that is still used today. He served as president from 2005 to 2009, stepping down for health reasons. In Ohio, where hams have been preparing for an April 23rd event called Near Vertical Incidence Skywave Antenna Day, Organizers are emphasizing that this isn't just an Aries event. Hap Holly, KC9RP of the Rain Report, spoke recently with Stan Broadway, N8BHL, ARRL's Ohio Section Emergency Coordinator, on how this one-day adventure in antenna research is designed to work for all hams.
The purpose of the day is to try these different antenna configurations and see which one works the best for you. Several groups had a number of antennas. Several other groups might have had one antenna that they were trying to experiment with. So that's what we're doing again on the 23rd. We're going to have as many teams as we can trying as many different antenna configurations as they can think up to find out which ones work best. Since Ohio is generally flat, generally the same kind of terrain, we can take a compilation of what happens around the state, narrow it down, let's say, to the top three or four performing antennas, and get an idea of what the best antenna would be for an ARES group to pack in a go box for portable operation or emergency communications. We're changing the program a little bit this year in that we're going to set up about four or five anchor stations. It's great to make as many random contacts as we can, but sometimes that doesn't help you evaluate one antenna against another. So we're going to have anchor stations at different corners of the state and in the center that you can call and say, here's my signal, give them a test, and this operator will be able to give you back a fairly critical signal report. If you then change antennas or modify what you have, raise it, lower it, whatever, then you call the same anchor stations back and say, okay, how does this compare? And they'll give you another equally critical signal report. So you get a much better and much more cohesive look at how your antennas are performing against each other.
To hear more of this conversation between Hap Holly and Stan Broadway, visit the Rain Report website, therainreport.com. You can also listen via Twitter at the Rain Report and via iTunes. Our thanks to Hap Holly, KC9RP. The Cherryville Repeater Association is opening the doors of its annual Hamfest and Technology Expo on Saturday, March 12th at the North Hunterdon Regional High School in Annandale, New Jersey, from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. The Hamfest expects to draw a large crowd from the Flemington, New Jersey area and beyond. In addition to 30 vendors and a variety of seminars, the Hamfest will also host an operating flex radio station so visitors can experience software-defined radio technology for themselves. There will also be a seminar on digital mobile radio technology. Further south, hams in the Charleston, West Virginia area are prepping for that area's Big Ham Fest. In its 32nd year, it has a whole lot of new offerings. We hear more from Jim Dameron, N8TMW.
The annual Charleston, West Virginia ARRL Ham Fest is slated for Saturday, March 19th, 2016, from 9 to 2 in a new location this year, Emmanuel Baptist Church Activity Center, 1401 Washington Street West in Charleston, West Virginia. Randy Dameron, N8XEA Ham Fest President, comments.
It's the Charleston Area Ham Fest coming up on Saturday, March 19th. In our 32nd year, proud to say we are indeed West Virginia's largest ham fest. We have several repeat vendors coming back, also local hams with all their items, some 100 tables of deals that ham radio enthusiasts just can't live without. And this year, we've added a food caterer with both a breakfast and lunch menu. We're also featuring three forums, antenna discussion, one on the National Weather Service, and one from ARRL/Aries. We always have VE testing that begins at 12:30. And in addition to our door prizes, which include handheld radios that'll be given away every hour, the grand prize, a $500 gift certificate from Universal Radio in Columbus. If you're in the West Virginia regional area, we hope you'll stop by and check us out. This is Randy Dameron, N8XEA.
Thanks, Randy. Hope to see you at the Charleston, West Virginia Ham Fest Saturday, March 19th. Details at w8gk.org and click on the link. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jim Dameron, N8TMW in Charleston, West Virginia.
Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the Southern Michigan Repeater Network's 6 linked repeater systems, serving all of Southern Michigan and parts of Northern Ohio. Two hams are stepping down from leadership roles, one at the Amateur Radio Lighthouse Society and another at the ARRL. Jim Widener, K2JXW, founder, owner, and president of the Amateur Radio Lighthouse Society, has resigned due to health reasons. The New Jersey-based society, which sponsors the Intercontinental Lightship Lighthouse Week, as well as National Lighthouse Day in August, is looking for someone to take up the reins as leader. The organization works to promote the roles that lighthouses and hams have in preserving maritime safety. There are about 2,000 dues-paying members. If no one comes forward, Widener has said the society's activities will cease after June 30th of this year. For more information, contact him via email at jxwidener@gmail.com or phone him at 856-486-1755. Another executive is stepping down, this one at the ARRL. Chief Operating Officer Harold Kramer, WJ1B, has retired after 11 years at the Connecticut headquarters. He has been the author of the Inside HQ column in QST magazine, helped introduce a digital edition of the magazine, and served as co-chairman of the Centennial Convention. He was praised recently by ARRL's marketing manager Bob Intermitson, NQ1R, with these words, quote, "Through his Inside HQ column, hundreds of personal tours, loads of hamfest and convention travel, radio club meetings, and shaking a lot of hands, Harold packaged the contributions of ARRL and every staff person and delivered that story to members, prospective members, and loads of friends and visitors," end quote. Fellow hams, you're in good company. FCC records show that growth in amateur licenses continued through 2015, with 735,405 licensees, a record in the agency's Universal Licensing System database by year's end. Those figures reflect an increase of 9,130 over December 2014. In 2014, the amateur radio ranks grew by a net 8,149 licensees. Not surprisingly, the largest growth area was in the technician license class, which added 6,570 new hams in 2015. There were 3,079 new general class licensees, and amateur extra class added another 3,496. The figures reflect a steady growth in amateur radio's ranks annually since 2007. Looks like there'll be a lot more people calling CQ this year if they haven't started already. Meanwhile, veteran hams are showing some creativity, too. A group of hams in a Florida retirement community have established an emergency neighborhood ham watch and in the process managed to get the blessings of their homeowners association. Amateur Radio Newsline's Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, has their story.
We live in an area that is prone to hurricanes and tornadoes. Most of our club members are very active in the Lake County, Florida, Aries group. And we thought if we formed our own club here, we might be available for an emergency in a hurricane or a tornado and report back to our local county EOC that everybody is A, okay, or B, we need some help, and be a funnel of information from our gated community to the emergency operating center.
That's Royal Harbor Radio Club President Ted Liebers, K1AYZ. The club saw a need to include hams in their housing association's emergency disaster plans.
What we have done is we've actually set up a communications disaster plan for Royal Harbor specifically. We presented that to our management board here, and they have made it a part of their overall disaster plan for Royal Harbor, which has been approved by emergency management at the EOC. And as a matter of fact, emergency management was so impressed with the whole thing, they've tried to get other retirement communities to do the same thing. So it's sort of become a model in this area.
Lieber says there was also an unforeseen benefit when the club members got involved with the homeowners management group.
As a result of our club here at Royal Harbor and our good relationship with the homeowners association management group, we've actually now had two of our ham club members put on the architectural review committee. One of the jobs of the architectural review committee is to sort of police any antenna situations. So you might call it subversion, I guess, to some extent. But it works out. The homeowners association is happy with what we do. They're happy that we're taking part in the disaster plan for the community, and it's given them some publicity, and it's given us some publicity as well.
When he was looking to buy, Liebers told me he looked at several housing developments, but asked if they allowed outside ham antennas. When they told him no, he kept looking. He says there are developments in Florida which do allow for ham antennas. You just have to look around a bit to find them. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY.
It's being called a historic contact, and indeed, the satellite communication made on February 28th between Federico Mainz, LU5UFM in Buenos Aires, and Marcello Duca, LU1AET in Argentinian Antarctica, was just that. The Radio Club of Argentina and AMSAT-LU described their call as the first contact via satellite between Argentinian Antarctica and the Argentinian mainland. Marcello was running 15 watts and using a handheld transceiver. Federico was using 4 watts. Using the SO-50 satellite, their 2-minute QSO clearly went the distance. Their signals covered nearly 2,700 kilometers. Was it rock and roll, reverb, or something else? When Apollo 10's crew heard a certain something on their radios while traveling on the dark side of the moon, well, the odd sound they heard in May of 1969 has finally been sorted out, and the explanation is one that's familiar to lots of hams the world over. We get more from Amateur Radio Newsline and Wireless Institute of Australia's newsman, Graham Kemp, VK4BB.
You want some more brownies?
No.
Push.
That it music even sounds outer spacey, doesn't it? You hear that? That whistling sound?
Yeah.
Apollo 10 astronauts who orbited the moon 2 months before Neil Armstrong's famous 1969 landing heard mysterious and unexplainable music on the dark side. Because the modules were on the far side of the moon, they were out of range of earthly radio transmissions, and the spooky sound has been dubbed alien moon music.
Boy, that sure is weird music. No. It's a whistling, you know, like an outer space type thing.
Recently, unearthed recordings made by NASA of the journey show the astronauts reacting with surprise and confusion to an unearthly howling noise in their headsets. Is this the stuff of X-File scripts, of movies like Frequency, or even John Grant Fuller's non-fiction work titled The Ghost of 29 Megacycles? I'd hazard a guess the radios used between the lunar module and command module were using fairly high frequencies, but you can go lower down the dial to hear whistling noises, a kind of VLF musical radio reception using a very high gain audio amplifier as the VLF receiver. Our own national news reporter, Felix Gerry, VK4FUQ, has actually heard the ultimate shortwave listening DX, listening to the Jovian decametric emissions from the planet Jupiter, and this around 22 megahertz. Felix wrote of this back in the September 2003 issue of ESR, Electronic Science and Radio magazine, and it's also in the web in old postings. Just try typing the words Jovian decametric noise into your favourite search engine. So what did astronauts Stafford, Young and Seaman hear on the dark side of the moon? Certainly not Pink Floyd or David Bowie. Despite the conspiracy theories, the sound was likely nothing more than interference between the radios on the two different modules.
With thanks to ABC.net Australia, Allen Labs, the ARRL, the Cape May County Herald, CQ Magazine, DX.net, Hap Holly and the Rain Report, Irish Radio Transmitters Society, the New Zealand Association of Radio Transmitters, the New Zealand Herald, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, QSL.net, QRZ.com, Southgate Amateur Radio News, Sydney Morning Herald, Twit TV, Wireless Institute of Australia, and you, our listeners. That's all from Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, located at www.arnewsline.org. For now, with Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT, at the news desk in New York, and our news team worldwide, I'm Skeeter Nash, N5ASH in Topeka, Kansas, saying 7-3. And as always, we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2016, all rights reserved.